Going to spend a lot of our time really focusing on what that looks like in family structure. Was I supposed to do that? I'm sorry.
No,
that's okay.
It's me.
You caught all the important. It's all right. They didn't need
time
to hear my opinion on Doctor Who online, so it's okay. and so, because that will get you some hate mail right there. Let me tell you. But we're going to focus a lot today on what spiritual formation in the family context looks like with churches and families partnering together. So I'm going to take you, we're going to pick up some threads that have been laid by these first two ladies and take those threads into this next step. And I'm going to mix into that resourcing. So I'm going to talk about some resources. It is not going to be exhaustive. There's about 1,001 more resources out there that do what we're going to discuss. I'm going to talk to you about the ones that I'm familiar with the most. And so it's going to sound like product placement, but it's not. It's just what I use and what I know. And so we're going to use that as kind of our jumping off point for how those systems can work and what can be useful to you. And then we're going to talk a little bit about how that also bleeds into kind of staffing. And so that's one of those threads we're going to pick up from Shannon about what that looks like in your ministry context while we're kind of also holding that family thread from Holly's lesson. So so we're excited that you're here, and I hope you're ready to learn. I'm a kinesthetic visual learner, so I don't have a good handout for you, but I will email you my entire talk. So if you want to just sit and savor and not worry about trying to write things down, I will email the entire thing to you if you want to learn that way. I don't mind that at all. My business cards are down here, and you're welcome to grab one of those before you leave so that you can just listen and learn. If you're a note taker, have at it. The half sheet notes that I brought just have some of those resources referenced, so you don't have to try to catch names and scribble those things down. So did everybody get one of those? If there's some up higher, maybe pass them down. Okay. So where we're going to start with this is when you're thinking about shifting to a paradigm that's about formation, it's really important that everybody in that team is on the same page, or at the very least, they're looking at the same book. Because it's really easy for everybody to look at those words and think they know what it means and what direction they're going to go with it. And so in a church context, it's really important that you who are leading that, or who are the person in the classroom participating that, or the person who is coaching a parent to be part of that, that you're using the same definitions and ideas and concepts. And so it's important to get them on the same page. And so where you want to start with parents, and this is a starting point, not the perfect, most right starting point. It is one, is you want to get parents to understand that you as a church firmly believe that what happens at home 6 days a week is infinitely more important than the 2 hours I have on Sunday. And that is not how the church has typically thought of itself. The church has typically taught families that children's ministry is vital. That's where your kids are going to get their Bible. That's where we're going to fill their little minds with lessons and experiences that you can then use in life later in the week. This paradigm lends us to the idea that we want parents to understand we're going to lay some seeds, we're going to till some ground on Sunday morning, and we're going to have great Bible and great experiences, but what you do with it as the spiritual leader in your household the rest of the week is infinitely more impactful on your children than what we can do for you in 2 hours on Sunday. Particularly when you look at the math of how families attend church. And this is one of my favorite tools to use with our parents, is to get them to have a real concept of time and why time matters. Because you hand a little precious baby to a parent and they think, initially, I have all the time in the world. This is a tiny baby. And then the very next second, they think, oh my gosh, the baby already grew. I have no time at all. And they live in sort of a panicked state of time all the time. And what you want them to understand is that parenting can be broken up into these chunks of time that they can make very reasonable efforts in participating in formative experiences for their children. In our church, we use a concept from the company called Rethink that involves marbles. So this marble is 1 week in the life of a child or a children's ministry volunteer. That's how I want you to think about this marble. And if you count up the estimated life of a child from the time they're born to about the time they graduate high school, you've got just under 1,000 weeks to impact that child. When you give a parent that number, they go, oh, I don't in fact have forever. I have 1,000 weeks. That's a very concrete image. I have 1,000 weeks to impact the life of my child before I send them into the world as a faithful adult. And some of the things that we like to do to help parents understand that is, don't think about it as 1,000 weeks. We want you to think about it as 1 week at a time. And we want you to embrace that. So I'm going to share a video with you that is one of the resources we use. The guy that's going to be talking in it is named Reggie Joyner. And he is a writer and the director of the Rethink Group. And we like their stuff because they have a lot of money and video cameras, and we don't. And so that's why we love resources like this, because we don't have a lot of money and video cameras and beautiful prop designers. And so this is a good tool, because this is something powerful and meaningful and carries the weight of what parents believe is an expert to say things that we're already saying to them. So this video, it's about 9 minutes long, so it's not like a snap fast thing, but it has really valuable information in it on where to start bringing your parents into the idea of you need to be on the same team because time has a measurement. So.
So several years ago, we handed out a jar of marbles to parents and leaders. There were 936 marbles in each jar. That's actually the number of weeks estimated between birth and high school graduation. Parents and leaders were challenged to reduce the marbles to the actual number of weeks each child had left in their home or church. Then they were given a simple assignment. Remove one marble each week. The practice of losing marbles had a strange effect on a number of families. It illustrated the collective value of time. And it helped them readjust their priorities. It made each week matter a little more. Let me show you what it did. It helped them see what we would say is time over a period of time. It reinforced a simple principle. When you see how much time you have left, you tend to do more with the time you have now. At this point, you may be thinking, that's a really stupid idea. I mean, I already really have enough pressure. I can't wait to get reminded every day that I'm running out of time with my kids. Okay, maybe there is a downside to creating a marble countdown clock, like depression or guilt or anxiety. But the upside to visualizing your time is that it helps you stay focused with what you do with your time. Creating a simple countdown clock could be just what you need to remind you that what you do every week matters. So does this mean you have to make every second count? No. Does it mean you have to turn every minute into a teaching opportunity and keep a daily record or journal for it all? No, not unless you want to drive yourself and those around you crazy. Here's an idea. What if you just decided to take your life 1 week at a time? Actually, that's why time over time matters. You don't have to make every second count when you understand that how you do what you do this week is connected to the next week and the next. It's really time over time that lets us do something unusual. It's time over time that lets us make history. Let's think about it another way. Most kids don't know that what you're doing this week is going to be a formative part of their history. They're just kids. They only see now. To them, you just built a sandcastle, took them to swim lessons, played basketball in the driveway, saw a movie, ate pizza. But you're an adult. You see yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So you should know better. You should realize by being present in kids' lives week after week in a variety of different ways, you are actually making history. Any parent or leader can do that, as long as they decide to show up and be present week after week in the life of a kid or teenager. When what you do this week is repeated next week and the week after that, it just has a snowball effect. The problem is you can't always see the results, but you can see the time. You just can't see what it's accomplishing. But there's a reason you can't see immediate results. Think about this. The reason you can't see spiritual growth is because it's too spiritual. The reason you can't predict pivotal moments is because they're too unpredictable. But it doesn't mean something spiritual isn't happening. It doesn't mean something pivotal isn't occurring. The best thing you can do is to choose to keep investing in what you can't see, to keep being present for what is not happening, to keep trusting that time over time will do what God has designed it to do. Here's another thing to think about related to time. Time was created, right? So that it obviously has a purpose. I mean, it's no accident that the Earth spins on its equator at approximately 1,000 miles per hour as it moves through space at a speed of 67,000 miles per hour. It's no accident that the sun rises and sets with mathematical accuracy. The seasons change. The entire universe has a predictable rhythm. The cosmos works together like gears on a clock. And if we can read it, we can evaluate and predict how things grow, how they change, how they age. It just seems obvious that time exists for a purpose. Have you ever stopped to think that maybe God established time as a platform so he could communicate something so complex that it needed to be presented strategically over time? Why didn't God send Jesus as soon as Adam and Eve ate the fruit? He could have resolved the issue then and there, but he waited. He used time. He gave Abraham a son. He let Joseph sit in jail. He sent Moses to deliver a nation. He let a nation wander in the desert for decades. Have you ever thought about why? It was like God decided, I can help you understand something with time that you could never really understand in a moment. You see, they're just aspects of God's nature, secrets about life, codes to the universe that are so intricate they simply take time to decipher. And if a Heavenly Father uses time to clarify and solidify certain values in our heart over time, then over time may be the best way to cultivate what matters in the hearts of our own children as well. In other words, some of the most significant gifts we can give the next generation is what we give them over time. That makes what you do this week and next week and the week after strategic. As parents or leaders, it's important that we realize there are certain things that can only be communicated, understood, and discovered over time. For example, a child doesn't experience worth because he's loved once, but because he's loved by someone over time. Kids don't understand the world through a single event, but through a collection of stories over time. Teenagers aren't motivated to change by one phrase, but by words that move them over time. You don't feel like you belong because of an invitation to something, but because you've been welcomed in a tribe or with a group of people over time. No one discovers how to live in a moment, but they figure out how to have joy in life over time. That's just the way life works. That's why we hope you never see a week the same way again. Even when you can't see tangible results, just trust that what you're doing matters. That's why it helps sometimes to visually see how much time you have. It's not just 936 marbles. It's your time. For example, if a kid is 9 years old, you've already lost half your marbles. You're down to 468 marbles. It also means you only have 312 marbles before they actually get their license. Trust me, when they start driving, things will really pick up speed. After that, you only have 4 more summer vacations with them before they probably move out. You did know that, right? One day, they will move on. I mean, they'll still speak to you occasionally, probably. You'll still see them during some holidays, but it's never really going to be the same again. No, I'm not trying to depress you. I'm just trying to illustrate how fast it really goes. And raise the bar a little on what happens this week. If you happen to be a group leader in a church, you'll get about 50 weeks to influence a kid or teenager this year. Actually, when you take out holidays, sports, sick days, and other random events, you only physically see these kids during about 40 of those weeks, for about an hour a week. That's only 40 hours to convince them about the things that matter most in their life. The bottom line is, you're losing your marbles, or your weeks, however you want to think about it, but don't think of that as a negative. That's why you need to play for keeps. With every week that passes, with every marble you lose, you are making history. You're increasing your sphere of influence in a kid's life. Playing for keeps means you get serious about what you do with your time. And one way to do that is to simply visualize time. Literally, create physical cues to remind you about time and how much time you have left. Sure, it may seem a little morbid at first, but some have discovered it can be smart to visualize your time. One leader in the Bible says we should actually pray, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. So how does counting your days give you a heart of wisdom? I'm not really sure, but I can guess. Visualizing time may help you pace yourself, narrow your focus, guard your margin, value quality interaction, and become more intentional about what you do. We just think, if you will stop occasionally and count your weeks, you'll tend to make your weeks count a little more. You'll become more intentional about doing the things that matter most over time.
Okay, so how do you feel? What do you think about that? You can answer that as a parent, as a ministry leader, as a Bible class teacher. What are your thoughts?
It helps us to make sure that we're being intentional about what we're doing. Intentionality becomes really important whenever you realize that there are a number of opportunities that you're going to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On average, and lots of people have seen this statistic, we get 40 Sundays a year in our church with the average American family. 40 Sundays a year that they walk in our doors and pay attention to what we're trying to get them to do to raise their children to have a lasting and authentic faith. That's an enormous amount of pressure. And then when you think about a parent and they're like, I have this finite amount of weeks before I'm going to unleash this person onto the world. And that's a big deal. All the mommies in the room, take a deep breath. You're okay. You're going to get through this. There's actually an app that does this as well. It's called the Legacy app. I have my nephews in my Legacy app because my nephews live far away from me. And so it's very important to me to count the time that I have to impact their lives because they don't live where I live. I don't get to see them every week. Or, you know, I go months without seeing them except for Skype and phone calls and things like that. And so it's important to me. I have a parent in my ministry that put the Legacy app on her phone and had a panic attack and immediately took it off the next day. So you use the tools that work for you, and you walk away from the tools that don't. And that is true of a leader and a parent. So this is something that we use to give our parents a common language because this is an important part of strategy. Because this is really charming, and Reggie says very pretty words and has a beautiful set that tells us how time is important. And then I sit here as a minister and go, holy cow, what do we do next? And so what you do next is you start to make a plan and you build a strategy. And so we're going to talk about a few principles for building a strategy to communicate with your parents, what you'd like this to look like and how you want to walk alongside them and be their partner. Because time is fleeting, but we don't want it to escape, and we don't want our parents to be sitting in our classrooms panicking over the fact that we just told them how little time they have left. We want them to know we are right here with you, and we are going to keep doing amazing things to help you parent well toward faith. So we're going to go through just a couple of tips on that. Start with big principles and small changes. Big principles are very important because big principles tell your parents the heart of what you want for them. And the thing that you want the most in a truly synced strategy of family and church working together instead of just working near each other, you want to make sure that parents know you've got their back. You are on their side. The things that are important to them and their children are important to you, and it matters the choices they make to parent and to teach the Bible and to give their children biblical experiences and communities of faith. And so you want to start with big principles. Decide who you are as a leader or as a team or as a church and what it is that you want parents to know about your ministry. So start with big dreams and ideas and thoughts and, you know, make charts and maps if you have to. Scribble on a whiteboard somewhere. I have a giant whiteboard in my, it's it's probably the size of half of this central one in my office because, like I said, I'm kinesthetic visual. I have to do it to learn it. And so I have a giant whiteboard in my office, and it constantly has things that I think about, you know, this for Mother's Day, like you can see, because my computer is up here, I had to make sure there's nothing weird on it. But, like, I have a Mother's Day file because I've been co-writing our sermon with our preacher while I've been traveling the last couple of weeks because we're going to talk to our moms about the fact that mommy shame is not okay. And so all over my marker board are ways that I want our moms to hear how we love them and that they are enough. And that's a big principle that we're going to communicate to them. So start with big ideas and small changes, because change is scary. And so if you march into your beautiful children's ministry that is already awesome or on its way to more awesome, and you start ripping up the carpets and throwing out the curriculum and whatever else you're going to do, then the parents are going to go, hold up, I don't know about that. Like you said, you loved me, but now you've totally thrown my life into chaos because I need things that are comfortable. I need things that I recognize. I need things that I understand. So dream big, move small until you have the space to grow. It's like the goldfish. He starts off in a small tank, but you put him in a bigger tank and he gets bigger. It's like plants. You put a tree in a pot, and when it gets bigger, then you put it in the ground. So start small, grow when the ministry and the families are ready for the next step, for the expansion. You know, always be ready for what that next thing is going to be. And I would encourage you, start the conversation before you're even ready to do anything. Start the conversation now. And what that can look like is conversations with parents that you have friendships with. Take them out to coffee. Take them out to lunch. Take them out to breakfast. Whatever it is, invite them to your home for dinner if you are a hospitality person. Invite those parents, just a few together, and say, you know what? We are dreaming about something big because we want you to know that we are walking alongside you and we want to do faith formation better because we want to do it with you instead of for you or instead of you. So what would you want from a church that looked like that? If you got to build the ideal children's ministry, tell me what it would look like. Because they're not going to know the theology, and they're not going to know the theory, and they're not going to know what it's like to sit in a shepherd's meeting and go, this is what we need. But they're going to tell you what they want for their children, and they're going to tell you how a church can help them. And so let them give you those dreams and those ideas. Start those conversations before you ever launch a new program or idea or system or class or whatever. Start having those conversations. And then when you're ready to start making moves, it doesn't have to be grand. It doesn't have to be, and now the whole children's ministry will have a parent formative event. That's cool. You'll get there, but have a little event. You know, pick one age group and say, here's something we're going to do to just try this out. A lot of you probably already do things like this, like a baby dedication or blessing. That is an event that partners you with parents. That's the moment when you get to look at somebody who's having a brand new baby and say, we are here for you, and it's going to be scary and tiring and hard and fabulous, and we want to walk through every step of it with you. One of the funny things that I do that I've actually had a parent take me up on it, which is awesome. At our baby dedication event, I hand out my business card to the women and tell them, because it's got my cell phone number, and I'm like, when it's 3 a.m. and you are so done and you think you are alone in the world and there is not someone that cares one iota about the fact that you haven't slept in a month, I want you to call me. Because we mean it when we say we are there for you. Now, they think that's hilarious. They laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. But it is the truth. And the first time that one little brave mama called because she was at her wit's end, it brought her back from the brink. That is a woman who is devoted to the identity of our church. Because she asked for help, and she got it, and she believes that we are there to walk this path with her. So start with something small. A couple of suggestions of things that we do is our baby dedication. Our baby dedication is not just a Sunday event. We actually have a meeting ahead of time with those parents very briefly, and we send out a packet of information that has some little miniature talks on a CD or an MP3 file. And they listen to those talks and do a little homework assignment about what they're dreaming about for their children, and how they plan to invest in their own spiritual lives while being a parent. And then they bring those things to the event, and we bless babies in worship, and then we feed the families lunch, and they bring their, the people that are their support group, the grandparents or the aunts and uncles or the best friends or their small group, because we're a small group church. They bring those people to lunch with them, and they all get their own table, and they have time, and they share their homework with that table, and we pray the words over them. These people are your support group. They are the people that are going to be there to show your children faith, to show you support, to help you reach the dreams that you have for your child. This is a tiny event. This is not a huge thing. And it is a really lovely way that parents get to hear us say, right at the beginning of the journey, you can do this in little tiny steps. It's not going to be overwhelming, and we're going to be here with you. Another thing that we do is we call it the preschool rhythm event. All families have a rhythm. That doesn't mean you have an order or a schedule or that everything goes the same, but all families have rhythms that are the same. We typically put our children to bed the same way most of the time. We handle bath times and meal times about the same way most of the time. If you look at the average family, they have patterns that they follow. Well, no parent wants the children's minister to stand up or call them and say, "Here's a kit we want you to take home and add a bunch of stuff to your schedule." They want to hear, "Here's a kit to take home that totally fits in line with what you're already doing. Here's a card that gives you 5 questions that you can talk about at bedtime because it's going to match the story that the storyteller shared on Sunday. Here's a tweet on Wednesday. Ask your kids this at dinner and share a time that you made a mistake in this same way, because we talk about how Paul made a mistake on Sunday." And so we try to give them tools that fit with what we're doing, but that put the control in their hands about how that formation goes. So with our preschool event, we have a thing where the preschool families, and this is just 3 to 5 year olds, not yet in kindergarten, and the parents and those kids come to the church, and we have fake bedtime, bath time, drive time, play time, meal time stations set up. And the parents get in groups, and they rotate through the stations, and they play at these rhythms. And they have little instruction cards or a guide that walks them through what to do. In our drive time, we have this brilliant preschool teacher that lines all the chairs up, and she uses tape and makes a car outline on the floor. And she pretend drives everybody in her van to the post office. And they talk about people in the community. They take a casserole to a lady at church who was in the hospital. So she does these things that we are all doing in our lives. And she models how to tie that in to a spiritual behavior and a formative experience that is part of daily living. And so the key to that event is they have to do it. Do it, learn it. Do it, learn it. All the time. Do it, learn it. Because I can stand in, I can stand up in front of 1,000 parents and I can explain, you know, with the best of them what this looks like. But when you come to an event and it's really fun and your friends are there and your kids get to play with their buddies and they actually see how simple it is to add 2 questions to bath time, or how simple it is to just talk to your kids about what's going on in the car while you do it, then they think, "Oh, I can totally do this. I thought you wanted me to, like, sit down on the couch and have family Devo. That's so not my bag." That's okay. We're not asking for that yet. You'll get there eventually. We want you to take one step. One step beyond whatever it is that you're not doing yet. Just take one. And so that's a couple of ideas for there. We also do, with our older children, we do a new school year event where we bless our children in the worship service, because they are going out into the world, particularly kids at transitional ages, new kindergartners, new middle schoolers, new high schoolers. We pay particular attention to those age groups. Brand new preschoolers that are going from at home with mommy every day to preschool most of the day. We particularly bless those families, and we say to them, "Your child is now going to be exposed to someone else for more hours than they are exposed to you. And this is hard. We know that as a parent, you're a little, I'm not so sure about that. is this the right school? Is this the right town? Is this the right program? You know, they're asking those questions. And so we pray over their specific worries at the beginning of the school year. And we send their kids out with, and we have done that different ways. We have prayed over their physical backpacks, bring your backpack to church, and we're going to fill it with prayers. This last year, we made magnets of every school, elementary, middle, and high school of our entire county, and we passed them out, and you couldn't get your own. You just took what was in the tray when it passed by you, and you took it home, and all year long, you're praying for the kids of that school in your community. And it's just super simple. We printed them ourselves, you know. It was a little hard to track down mascots for a lot of schools, because we live a little bit in the country, and so, you know, they don't always have, like, an official mascot, but we figured it out, you know. And I go in people's houses and they're magnets on the fridge. They don't have children at that school. That school's on the other side of town, or they only have elementary kids and it's the alternative school for children in high school or something like that. And they're praying for those kids because somebody else is praying for theirs. And so little things, communicate to your parents, formative experiences. this next one is, this is probably the most important tool in my arsenal for parent strategy. And it is not wowsome. It's just the most important one. Change your filter system. When you are planning an event or kicking an event off the calendar, if you hang out in our staff meeting, we have a reputation for being machete wielders because our staff loves to kill programming. We do not like to do programming at our church that uses up resources, energy, or time, that does not serve a purpose that we believe in wholeheartedly. And so our staff will chop up a calendar. and so we're a little dangerous sometimes. But changing your filters means you need to have a set of questions that you apply to everything that you offer to your families at church. And it needs to be the same set of questions all the time, because that filter is going to help you stay on track for what you believe is the most important. So, for example, the filter system that we use in the children's ministry is, does this event program or class, does this event connect our parents to their children? Does this event connect our families to one another? Does this event connect our families to our church's purpose? So I'll say those again. Does this event help our parents connect with their children? Does this event help our families connect to each other? Does this event help our families connect to the church with our specific community purpose? And if it doesn't meet a lot of that criteria, we're going to revamp it, or we're going to walk away from it, or we're going to figure out what its purpose is supposed to be. If it doesn't fit the filters for what we think is valuable, then it is just taking up room on the calendar. And parents have enough of that. Parents have recitals and ball games and practices. And we live in a very sport-driven community, and I know that that is becoming more and more common everywhere. The community that we live in is like sports mad, even on very young levels, to the point that there is sometimes community upheaval over the drive for sports madness where we live. And so we walk a very fine line with sport parents because we don't want to guilt them where they don't want to be with us, but we certainly want them to know, we know you're on the ball field, but can we help give you some tools for how to keep your kids' faith going if you're going to be at the ball field instead of in the church building? Can we figure out how to do that together? And it comes from asking these questions. Are they connecting back to us, even if they're not in our building? Because the filters matter for everything that you do. And so that's really, really important. I'm going to give you just two examples of that. One is we do a thing called Family Worship Sunday. In our church, our schedule is a little non-traditional. We don't have like a Sunday school block. We have two worship services, and our children's programming runs concurrent to both of our worship services. We do a thing 4 or 5 times a year, typically on holidays, called Family Worship Sunday, where we have no children's programming. It's a volunteer off day. And the entire worship service is designed around honoring the family. And that doesn't mean we have the children come and do a performance, which is also cool. That's just not what we do. That's not our thing. It means every single element of the service is done by multiple generations. So children are serving communion with their parents, holding the trays. Daughters and fathers are leading prayers together. moms and dads and sons are in the praise team or on the band or whatever. And they're in the sermon. The preacher uses, he incorporates them. Like one year we did the parable of the sower, and he had children be each of the plants, and a funny dad that does improv be the farmer. And he just pulls them up at random. You know, some of those we schedule ahead of time. Some of those we just pull from the audience. And so, because what we want our kids to understand is, we didn't bring you in here today so that you could perform for the church. We brought you in here today because you are the church. Mm-hmm. And we want you to learn how to do all these things. And we want you to do it in a context that connects you to another generation, because that's how the church lasts, is by multiple generation connections. Holly uses this phrase all the time. Ivy Beckwith uses this phrase, that it's not intergenerational, it's multi-generational, because what you want is a cross-reference. You don't just want mom and dad. You want grandparent, mom, and kid, and aunt, and the single lady in the back of the auditorium who loves kids but doesn't have her own. We need her story in the life of our children. And this is one of the ways that we combine them. And another idea that we have done by looking through our filters is preachers love to come up with an idea where they're like, the whole church is going to do this series, and we're going to send this stuff home, particularly in a small group-driven church. We have that a lot. Our small groups typically study whatever our sermon series is on, unless that small group decides to do their own kind of one-off thing. And so sometimes that is not super kid-friendly. I don't know if any of you have used Rick Warren's 40 Days in the Word. Snore. Oh, my gosh. The videos are some of the most boring teaching videos I've ever seen in my life. Bless the man's heart. He's brilliant, but he has to stop making Bible study videos, okay? So this material is great, but those videos are killer. And even our adults were like, 2 weeks into it, like, do we have to watch the video to keep doing the study? Because I cannot deal with that. So when we looked at this material and decided we were going to do this, we were like, this is not going to fly with families. Like, we're trying to teach six major principles for putting active Bible study into your life, and that is what we're going to show them? No. And so we sat down as a team and said, let's write our own addendum to it. We'll use his material because his tools are great. And we'll just, you know, we'll suffer through the videos and it'll be funny. We'll do it all together. It's commitment. We can do hard things. And so, but we wrote family addendum packets that were, if there was an elementary version and a preschool version, and every family that had kids in those ages got those packets along with their small group material, and it took each of the six principles and broke it into a format where the parent could, after small group time, so at any time during the week that was not small group night, they could sit down with their children and teach the principle they just learned and then begin that practice. So we have this adorable family. He is like Mr. Tough Guy Cop Dad, and he's very engaged with his kids, but he is not terribly emotional, and that's okay. Mom is uber mom. She's on it. She is involved in everything. She does it all. She is super engaged with her kids. She wants, if the church says it, she wants to do it. And so this was, we knew something was going to happen. It was going to be good or bad. And this family took this Bible study packet, and with mom's insistence, this dad started reading a Bible story to his kids every night and asking them questions, because we asked them to commit to 6 weeks, and that's it. They committed to 6 weeks, and now that's his deal. If he's on shift, he calls home from the police car to read a Bible story to his kids, because he took one step from what he wasn't doing into doing something new, and now his kids love when they have already heard the Bible story at home. They love to tell the teachers, we already heard, we know the story. Our dad read it to us. They love that because they have had this formative experience that we had very little to do with. We sent home a packet that said, read to your kids, you know? And so those are a couple of our examples. So I want to kind of wrap up with that is be creative. So be creative. The resources that I have on here are just a couple of things that we have used. Think Orange is this book, which you're welcome to thumb through if you want. It is the orange strategy concept of parenting with families and churches. It is the strategy that our ministry is built on. That doesn't mean that you have to use this strategy or even look at it. Your church can partner with your parents from your own brilliant imaginations. This is just one idea that we use. Parenting Beyond Your Capacity might be the greatest parenting book I've ever read in my life. I give it away all the time. It's on your yellow sheet, Parenting Beyond Your Capacity. What I love about it is they open up the book by saying, we know you hate parenting books and you don't have time to read this. We're going to do our best to make this worth your while. And this book is very empowering to parents. It takes away the guilt of you're not doing it right or you're not doing enough by showing them what you are already capable of and how easy it is to go one step more. And then this last one is 52 Creative Family Time Experiences. This is a fantastic book for the parent that's like, I have no idea where to begin. Like, I like what you're saying, but I got no clue. And we did the 5 questions from the lesson, and it was okay, but I'm out. And we're going to the Grand Canyon next week, and I'd really like my kids to have, like, a memorable experience, and I have no idea what to do. This book is a great resource for parents that are clueless, or feel like they're clueless, because usually they're not as clueless as they think. They just need a nudge. So this book is really good because it has very concrete examples of how to have great spiritual experiences with your kids that are fun and interesting and different and stuff like that. And honestly, if you look that one up on Amazon, the also recommends, there's a whole great pile of stuff that you'll get there. So it's really, really good. So that's really kind of what I wanted to present to you. Do you have questions? Because I would love to answer questions. I know we don't have a lot of time, and I will hang out afterwards as well.
Another resource to look into, mm-hmm. that's not directly like Rethink, but it is called Faith at Home. And
yes.
It has great resources. Yeah. We're doing campaigns right now. We've mm-hmm. been doing one that is Meals at Home.
And Faith at Home is really
so
good. Yeah.
We've added where questions that are in a jar that parents were given, and you mm-hmm. go home, and they just pull questions out, and they have to answer that, and that gets the families mm-hmm. Coming together and eating together, which is a difficulty in our
huge.
World today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've done a prayer campaign, mm-hmm. so that's encouraging prayer, and the concept was that you pray 6 days a week, pray 5 times a week with your family, and 2 times with your spouses. So
Faith at home
is a good resource.
Faith at Home also has an app, and their Faith at Symbol Home, and they have books and online. They have an app for prayer that's really fun. If you use the app, it's great. This app is a prayer app, and this is awesome for, like, parents that get stuck in the moment. You use this app, and you open it up, and it has, like, mealtime, bedtime, like categories of when you might pray, and you tap it, and it will give you just a little start, a little prompt for how to pray. If you've already used that one or you don't like it, you shake your phone and a church bell rings and it gives you a different prompt. And so it's really fun. I know that sounds silly, and sometimes prayer is supposed to be more reverent than that, but sometimes it's okay for prayer to be fun and approachable as well. And that app is a really fun one because, you know, it will come up with a liturgical prayer, and someone may have never experienced something like that. Or it will come up with everybody has to pray with their foot touching the family member next to them. Like, so it's just a wide variety of things, and you just shake it, and this church bell rings. So,
can we author Faith at Home?
It's a group of authors because
it's a group of authors, but it is based in Rockwell. What is the church? Lake Point Church.
Yes.
Thank
you.
Yeah,
we'll get it to you. Yeah. We'll get it to you. So.
I think that what you have said to us is we assume that parents know how to do this.
Yeah.
And they don't.
Here, this is a great one-off question. Ask the parents in your ministry how many of them have told their own faith story to their children. Come on in. Because you will find that an enormous number of parents have never told their own faith story to their children. Because they don't know where to begin. They don't know when it's appropriate. You know, it's almost like they just need permission to tell how they came to God to their own children. It's incredible. So, okay, I'm going to hang out if you have other questions. If you didn't get a card and you wanted one, I will give you my address, whatever you need. So.
Any one of us are ready to talk to you this afternoon if you want someone.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming this week. We have loved talking to you guys.